This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering much of central Illinois. We're going to have a great show for you today. We're going to talk today about the real root causes. You know how everyone was always talking about the root causes of our problems are always material things. They're always talking about money, or they're always talking, you know, about poverty or other things. Well, we're going to talk about the real root causes. So when we get to our show, we're going to have a great show for you today. Remember that it's brought to you by you, and we can always use your donations. Without them, our station would not be able to operate. And if you'd like to make a donation, you can go to our website, and that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. You can go there, and it will tell you how to make a donation and give you information about ourselves. And maybe you can find something also that you can contribute or do in some other way to help us. We would appreciate any help that you would be able to give. If you'd like to call the station, our number is 309-807-2427. Again, that's 309-807-2427. And I'm here with my wife, Lynn, today. And before we start, Lynn is going to talk a little bit about the Feast of Christ the King. And that will be coming up here in our very near future. And it's an important topic. And I think she's going to have a few things to say about the Latin Mass as well. So I'm going to turn it over to my wife, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the real root causes, and it'll be a little bit related to some of the things we did last week. So I'll go give this over to Lynn, and we'll hear from her.
Well, tomorrow, the frog in my throat, boy. Anyway, tomorrow in LaSalle, Illinois, just an hour, maybe 10 minutes away, straight up 50, well, it used to be 51.
Straight up 39.
39. Talk about olden times and think of the old days. Yeah. Anyway, straight up the road there, go north, and the Church of the Holy Rosary in LaSalle, Illinois, they're going to have a solemn high Latin Mass in the Trinitine form, and it's sung, it's beautiful. Been up there before for the Mass, for that Mass, and it just really fills you with the Holy Spirit, believe me. If you can make it, go up there. Tomorrow's Mass starts at 1, I'm sorry, at 1 o'clock. And then afterwards, they're going to have a short procession around, probably around this block or so, won't be long, and then a reception and adoration after that, and then they will have a reception in the church hall in the basement of the church. I really urge anybody that can get up there to go and see. If you've never been to the Trinitine Mass, it's beautiful, just beautiful, especially when it's sung. What they're celebrating is the Feast of Christ the King. This was instituted less than 100 years ago in 1925 in the aftermath of the First World War. In the midst of the rise of communism in Russia and during the 16th century of the Council of Nicaea, which was in 325, Pope Pius XI instituted the feast in his encyclical Quas Primus. It was the first celebrated, took place in 1926, because this was in December that he published this. It was first celebrated on Halloween in 1926. It was originally supposed to be the last Sunday of October, just before the Feast of All Saints, which in 1926 happened to be October 31st. In 1969, Pope Paul VI revised it and gave it the current name and changed the date. Paul VI gave the feast the title, The Solemnity of Our Lord Jesus Christ, King of the Universe, and moved it to the last Sunday of the liturgical year, which is usually the end of November, and the beginning of December starts Advent. The feast was a response to the rise in secularism, atheism, and communism. Despite its recent Catholic origins, the feast is celebrated by many Protestants, even though it was created by a pope less than 100 years ago. Some Anglicans, Lutherans, Methodists, and Presbyterians celebrate the feast also. In the Protestant Church of Sweden, this Sunday is called the Sunday of Doom. Its official name is the Return of Christ. But its colloquial name comes from the fact they give a particular focus on the Last Judgment at Christ's second coming. And some of the Anglicans refer to this Sunday as Stirrup Sunday. This Sunday gets named for two reasons. First, the Anglican collect for the day begins with the word, "Stir up, we beseech thee, O Lord, the wills of thy faithful people." Second, some odd old pudding recipes required the pudding to sit several weeks before being cooked. This Sunday became a day that people would traditionally begin preparing pudding for Christmas, which includes stirring it up. I imagine it stirred up a lot of secular attitudes, shall we say. These two things came together in people's minds, and Wikipedia explains, supposedly, cooks, wives, and their servants would go to church, hear the word, "Stir up, we beseech thee, O Lord," and be reminded by association of ideas that it was about time to start stirring up the puddings for Christmas. I never realized that they started puddings so early. I mean, in modern day kitchens, you'd think you were poisoning somebody. Christ the King, there's a statue of Christ the King in Poland, and it's the largest statue of Jesus in the world. So that's a brief summary that I found in Simply Catholic, and I thought I could share that with you. Of course, this weekend, the 31st, is Halloween, and customs have changed. In the Middle Ages, it would be the poor going around begging for food, and they would knock on the door or the gate and ask for soul cakes, which were cakes, you know, like a pancake, a heavy cake in a round circle to represent eternity. And they would promise to pray for the deceased members in the home where they were coming to beg, and they were given the soul cakes, which later evolved to being donuts, circular, you know, for eternity. And they would sing a little ditty. Bob, you remember it?
I think it was, they called it a soul and going out a soul, and I think that's what they called it. And then they said, they would ask you for a treat, and it would be like one for Peter, one for Paul, one for the one that made us all, something like that.
That was exactly it. Yeah. And they sang that at each door. And later on, they even added costumes to fool the evil, disguise themselves to fool the evil spirits that were out that night. A lot of things about these traditions that are very interesting.
Yeah.
But Feast of Christ the King, which the church will celebrate on at the end of November, will be celebrated according to the old calendar in LaSalle tomorrow at Church of the Holy Rosary. And this will lead us into some of the things Bob's been talking about. This was this whole feast day was instituted because of the rise of nationalism, communism, materialism, and we still have the same problem. It's only gotten worse. So, Bob, go right ahead.
Okay, I'll talk a little bit more and sort of lead in from the kingship of Christ. It's important, I think, to what I'm going to say. And when we talk about some of the root causes of things that are happening in our society, and those root causes, as we'll see, are not material causes. Those root causes go to philosophy and theology. But here is something that Pope Leo XIII had to say in regard to the kingship of Christ. And he said, the Catholic teaching is that all authority emanates from God, and that the rulers of a country govern as his legates and not as delegates of the people. Thus, no government has the right to pass legislation which does not conform to the natural law, and that's what we're going to talk about here in a little while, that does not conform to the natural law, no matter what the proportion of those within a state desiring such legislation, or, you know, want. And so he's saying, in other words, it is not the people of a state that have ultimate authority. It is the kingship of Christ, the kingship of God, that has the authority. And this is what the Catholic Church teaches. And he goes on, he says, thus, no state has the right to permit divorce, abortion, or pornography. And, of course, divorce, abortion, and pornography have been destroying the family, which, of course, the Catholic Church holds as the building block of society. The social unit is the family, and not the radical individual, and not the so-called society itself. It is simply the family, and all the families together do make up what is the society. And if the family is destroyed, the society is destroyed. He goes on, in his largely ignored encyclical, and Lynn just talked about it, Quas Primus, on the kingship of Christ, Pope Pius XI teaches this: nor is there any difference in this matter between the individual and the family of the state, for all men, whether individually or collectively, are under the dominion of Christ. Just because people operate as a collective at times doesn't mean that somehow they supersede Christ. In him is the salvation of the individual. In him is the salvation of society. This is our Catholic teaching, and we should remember it. And Pope Pius goes on, and he says, however, the Church is not opposed to democracy in the sense that those exercising authority within the state are chosen by a vote based on universal suffrage. So the Church is not against democracy in that sense. And the Church is open to a lot of different forms of government, providing that they govern justly, that is, by the natural law. He goes on, Pius, and says, she is not concerned with the manner in which a ruler is selected, only with the principle that rulers, however chosen, govern as legates of God. Once this principle has been grasped, it can be seen how completely untenable is the position otherwise. So this is what I'm going to talk about, and it's the violation of this principle that is the root cause of our social problems, and the problems of deceit, and the problems of the corruption of our society that we are facing in a huge amount today. So we'll go to that. Before we do so, I want to read a few headlines that give us an idea of how far our country is sinking in its morals and ethics, and the fact that these are a result of a change in our philosophy and the theology that develops from that philosophy and that has been fixed and retained in the Catholic Church. At least in its dogma and doctrine and its teaching, if not in its actual practice by most of its members. And it was this dogma, theology, and philosophy that has built Western civilization, as I've said before. And that's what we'll talk about. But here are some headlines that you can read today, and they are shocking. This one is taken from the magazine First Things, and it's the November 2021 issue. It's an article by Scott Yenner, and Scott Yenner is a professor of political science at Boise State University in Idaho and a Washington Fellow at the Claremont Institute Center for the American Way of Life. And it says here, Planned Parenthood recently distributed flyers at Stewart Middle School in Tacoma, Washington. The flyers targeted 11-year-olds, informing them that they could have sex with anyone under the age of 13. And, of course, that anyone meant people of either sex. And that their parents were not entitled to determine whether they took birth control or were tested for sexually transmitted diseases. The kids could make up their own minds. Can you imagine something like that being said or done even, say, 10 or 15 or 25 years? This is how far it is getting to the point where it isn't rock bottom anymore. It's gone past rock bottom. It's drilling down even further into the rock. That's just one of the headlines. And the reason for these things happening is not all of the material causes that our government and our politicians say they are. Here's another article here in a newspaper. It says, parents warn of their children being subjected to transgender indoctrination. A sharp rise in the number of children in the United States who identify as transgender has alarmed some parents. Now, this is an issue that was non-existent just even a few years ago. It hasn't been that long ago. And now it is becoming rampant in our schools, and it's becoming rampant in our society that somehow people are going to cure themselves of whatever their ailments are by somehow transforming themselves from one sex or one gender to another, and actually to the point of mutilation. This is another shocking headline that's going on. Can you imagine? And nowadays, I can't imagine when I was a parent of, you know, small children that I would have had to worry about something like this, especially taking place in the schools. And here's another one. It talks about the United States Post Office carrying out surveillance on people who do not fit the leftist or liberal narrative to see if they somehow or another are an influence. And steps can be taken against them. So being spied upon by your own government services. Another one is the curse of fentanyl coursing through small town America, killing 96,000 people in the past year, have died at least from March 20th to March 2021. And this is another epidemic that is going on that we couldn't have imagined not many years ago. So I'm going to have to stop at this point and take a break. So stay with us. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about the root causes of things like this that are going on.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. And we're going to talk about some of the root causes of the social ills that are going on in our society. And I was mentioning some of these taken from various news sources and magazine sources. I mentioned the fentanyl crisis that has killed from March 2020 to March 2021, killed 96,000 people, and a lot of these mostly young people. These are more young people than have been killed by the so-called pandemic among young people. In fact, very few young people have died from it. And here are 96,000 deaths that seem to be totally ignored.
Very young people, too.
Exactly. There are some kids that are getting in, and parents are taking these drugs, and the kids are getting into the drugs themselves. And, of course, an overdose is very, very deadly. and that is happening. Another headline is that there has been a recent, under the Biden administration, removal, or at least a proposed removal, and I think it is getting done, of all safeguards for chemical abortion. I mean, the laws on the books were that a woman had to check with her doctor to make sure that she didn't have conditions and so forth in which a chemical abortion could cause serious injury or even death, and that is being removed. Young girls are also being able to get these pills with no parental notification. I mean, in school, for example, if a child takes aspirin, they have to have some kind of permission from the school nurse or their doctor, their parent, and so forth. But for a chemical abortion, it's being proposed, and I think it's happening, that they will be able to take chemical abortion pills without parental consent. And they're even pushing, sending these drugs, Planned Parenthood is pushing, sending these drugs by mail so that there is not even a contact with someone who is dispensing the drug. This is the degeneration that we are reaching. And it is not caused by poverty, and it is not caused by deprivation of material things at all. So, actually, what's causing it? It was a mistake, a deliberate mistake, the single greatest mistake ever made in the entire history of Western thought that is causing this. And I've talked about it a little bit before, but we're going to talk about it more specifically now. What was this mistake, this greatest mistake in Western history? It was a mistake in philosophy. It was the abandonment of Aristotelian and Thomistic philosophy, and hence the theology that follows from it. And in his book, The Last Superstition, A Refutation of the New Atheism, Edward Fazer talks about it, and he is a very prominent philosopher, and he talks about the fact of the abandonment of Aristotelian philosophy, the abandonment of the idea that the universe is imbued with meaning and direction and final causes. And he says here, how significant is Aristotle? He says, well, I wouldn't want to exaggerate, so let me put it this way. Abandoning Aristotelianism, as the founders of modern philosophy did, was the single greatest mistake ever made in the entire history of Western thought. And I've said it before that our whole Western civilization rests on the Catholic Church, and the philosophy of the Catholic Church was heavily, very, very heavily instituted by Aristotelian thinking. And more than any other intellectual factor, this abandonment has contributed to the civilizational crisis through which the West has been living for several centuries, and which has accelerated massively in the last century or so. And you can see the massive acceleration in the various examples that I just stated going right on in our headlines. Something like this could never have happened 50, 60, or 100 years ago, when at least the last vestiges of Aristotelian philosophy still prevailed, at least in the thinking of ordinary citizens. Perhaps without their even realizing it, they imbued it and accepted it from the teaching of the church, and all of Western civilization was imbued with this thinking, and it's falling away because of the abandonment of that philosophy by so-called modern science and by so-called modern materialism. It is implicated in the disintegration of confidence in the rational justifiability of morality and religious belief, in the widespread assumption that a scientific picture of human nature entails that free will is an illusion, in the belief that there is a mind-body problem, that somehow our minds and our bodies are somehow separated from each other, and that the only scientifically and philosophically respectable solution to it is some version of materialism. In other words, this whole idea that the world is totally based on material, and that all even thought is somehow material, and it is degenerating it actually into the absurd, and it has caused the relativism that doesn't allow us to have any absolute principles upon which to base ethics and human behavior. It has led to a very radical individualism, and at the same time, at the state level, sort of a radical collectivism, somehow or another, one contributing to the other and back and forth. And it says it has resulted in a version of materialism that causes the proliferation of varieties of relativism and irrationalism. In other words, what Aristotelian philosophy taught and the Catholic Church taught was a sane rationalism that looked at the world as purposeful in such a way that it could be understood and studied. Science and so forth was actually spawned by that kind of thinking, and this kind of thinking is falling away, and we're degenerating back into a dark, dark paganism, worse than the paganism of ancient times. It says it has degenerated also into scientism, which is not science. Scientism is the idea that somehow or another science by itself can provide us with a material explanation of the universe upon which we can base morals and ethics and somehow create an almost utopian society. It also has led us into a hyper-rationalism that the rational mind is the and empirical evidence and thought is the only knowledge that can be arrived at. And it says in the modern world it leads to corrosive skepticism about the legitimacy of any authority and the radical individualism and collectivism that have followed in that wake. So it's insane. You have a radical individualism, but at the same time, it leads to a form of collectivism that is as bad or worse than the collectivism we found not many years ago in communist and extremely socialist societies. It goes on, an intellectual and practical depersonalization of man that all of this has entailed, and which has in turn led to mass murder on a scale unparalleled in human history. And he's talking there about abortion. Its logical implication can also be seen in today's headlines, and that's exactly what we just talked about and what we heard from. And it goes on, in the judicial murder of human beings, he's talking here about euthanasia, and it being promoted and allowed, and assisted suicide that's being promoted and allowed, and even the proposal that babies can be killed by some philosophers, so-called philosophers, and some of our modern academic institutions are proposing that babies, the parents have the authority to decide whether or not to keep their baby for up to 30 days after birth. And also the killing of people considered brain dead, which is going on and was never even heard of until recently, especially with organ transplants. So these are some of the things that are being caused by this radical change in our philosophy and theology, caused by the abandonment of Aristotle and the abandonment, of course, of the scholastic philosophers of the Catholic Church during medieval times, especially Thomas Aquinas. And I've talked before on how the fact, this idea that the medieval time was some kind of a dark age has been promoted by a lot of people practicing scientism. And the fact is that is not true, and it never was true. Some of the greatest advancements in thinking, the greatest advancements in architecture, the greatest advancements in art, and the greatest advancements in science and invention occurred during the Middle Ages under the thinking of people like Thomas Aquinas and under the thinking of the scholastics and under the thinking of Aristotelian philosophy. So these are some of the things. Edward Fazer goes on to say, he says, what I'm saying is that it was a logical development of Aristotelian ideas, primarily by his medieval scholastic admirers. And these were people like Thomas Aquinas, one of the greatest philosophers and theologians that the world has ever seen. He says, and it was the abandonment of these that provided the most, it was these ideas that provided the most powerful and systematic intellectual foundation for traditional Western religion and morality. And for that matter, it was these ideas of Aristotle and picked up and carried on by Thomas Aquinas and other medieval scholastics that set the foundations for science, that set the foundations for morality, that set the foundations for politics and theology in general. So these are things that we are losing because of the abandonment of the Catholic philosophy, much of it based on Aristotle through the medieval scholastics like Thomas Aquinas and others. And he goes on to say that the modern idea of liberalism is a philosophy purporting to offer a middle ground between radical individualism and collectivism, some kind of a middle ground. But what it really gives us is a diabolical synthesis of the two, a bureaucratically managed libertinism. In other words, on the one hand, a bureaucracy and a government that protects all kinds of radical, individualistic, perverted human behavior, but at the same time provides a huge collective power that punishes or controls anyone who disagrees with it. So you get the worst of both under what liberalism has degenerated into. And I've talked about before that liberalism proclaims not to be this, but it degenerates into it, and it always has. And true conservatism, according to Fazer here, says is a conservatism which sees the family rather than the individual or society as a whole, as the foundation, fundamental social unit. And true conservatism is the true third way. And but most conservatism that we see today is simply a shadow of liberalism. In other words, it seems to follow right along behind liberalism, picking up all of the liberal proposals, but only after those proposals have been in existence for a while. And it doesn't understand that the concept of the individual and the concept of the state can lead to a radical individualism that in effect is actually controlled by a huge collective state. And true conservatism sees the individual family as the unit, social unit of society, and it sees that family in the setting of the natural law, which we will be getting into as we move along here. And so I want to go here to a little bit and talk about the basics, beginnings of the natural law. And if I can find the right page here, here it is. Here it says, the Aristotelian idea is precisely that goal-directedness can and does exist in the natural world, even apart from conscious awareness. And this is the basis of natural law, as we will get into as we go along here. It says, still, it is very odd that this should be the case. One of the raps against final causation, that is, goal-directedness or ends in nature and in living things, it says that one of the raps against final causation is that it seems clearly to entail that a thing can produce an effect even before that thing exists. Hence, to say that an oak tree is the final cause, that is, the end, the direction, the end, the goal of an acorn. It seems to entail that the oak tree, which doesn't yet exist, in some sense causes the acorn to go through every state it passes through as it grows into an oak, since the oak is the goal or natural end of the acorn. But the question is how can that be? How can an acorn have a goal that is not yet in existence? And this is what Aristotle was getting at when he said you can see in nature end final causes, ends, goals like this. But how can this be? We'll consider those cases where goal-directedness is associated with consciousness. The first thing we have to look at is, let's take a look at how this happens in with the humanity itself, with people, and how it happens in us. A builder builds a house. He is a cause that generates a specific kind of effect. That is, the house is the effect that of the builder, that the builder causes. But the reason he is able to do this is that the effect, that is the house, exists as an idea in his intellect before it exists in reality. And this is what I was talking about last week. You know, in other words, I was talking about an unchanged changer, something that is purely actual, something that contains everything. And people might sometimes wonder, well, you know, what is this? Is this some kind of a, you know, a thing where an unchanged changer would be an amalgamation of everything that there is in the world, like some giant pot that contains everything, some kind of a gooey gunk that contains all the things in the world? And no, that's not the case at all. It is the case in of a human being who could be a carpenter, for example, laying in bed at nighttime, and yet the concept of the house is contained in his head. In other words, the entire house is contained in the carpenter, and of course the carpenter doesn't look anything like a house or anything like the boards or the nails or the shingles or the paint or anything else that goes into a house. Yet he is the cause of the house, and he is the cause of that house before the house even exists. It exists in his mind. And so the house exists, in a sense, before it ever comes into material existence. We're going to have to stop here and take a break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, and we're talking about the idea of final causes, the idea of goals existing in nature, existing in ourselves, existing in the universe. And we're talking about a rational world that is not at random at all. And we're talking about, for example, how an end or a goal can exist, in a cause can exist in a sense before the thing even, you know, comes into existence. In other words, the final cause of an acorn is an oak tree. But the acorn is pointing toward the oak tree before the oak tree even comes into existence. And we're asking how that can be. And it's the same thing as a house that doesn't yet exist, but exists in the mind of a human being. That is the mind of the carpenter or the builder who will build a house. The carpenter doesn't look anything like a house. And he could be lying asleep in bed, not doing anything at all. But nevertheless, he knows exactly what to do and how to build a house, all the tools and so forth to use. And other people in their minds exist the ability to make those tools. And the house can come into existence because it already exists in the mind of a human being. And so Aristotelianism talks about a final cause, a final actualizer, that must be in existence to actualize everything that does come into existence. And that actualizer then would be God. And God would then contain everything in the entire universe, all the things that we see around us. And how would he contain that? It would contain that because God's mind mind would be the final cause. And since we know our own minds can go out of existence, and yet we know there are things that would still stay in existence, a mathematical formula and so forth, 2 plus 2 is 4, is going to be 2 plus 2 is 4, no matter what universe it exists in, and no matter whether we exist or not. So those things must exist in a mind. And that mind then gave direction to the universe. And that's what the Catholic teaching is, and that's basically what Aristotelian is, that there has to be a final causer, an unchanged changer, a changer that brings everything to into existence, keeps it in existence, and that changer can't come into existence by itself, and that changer can't go out of existence either, and that changer can lack nothing. That changer has to contain everything there is, and what would that be? That would be a mind, because a mind can contain everything and yet not be in any way like the things it contains. In other words, a cause can't give what it doesn't have. It has to be able to give, to create an effect. It has to be able to give that effect the things the effect has. So it could be a particular thing, such as a flame could burn a piece of paper and turn it into ashes. But you could also have the same thing. You could have the flame, for example, in a match or a cigarette lighter, and it doesn't look anything like a flame. But it contains the flame. The cigarette lighter does, and so does the match. In the same way, the carpenter doesn't look anything like a house, but a carpenter contains the house. In the same thing, God is spirit. He doesn't look anything like the things that he contains, but nevertheless, he contains them anyway, just like a mind can contain a house or any other thing, tools and so forth, without looking like the things it can contain. In other words, a cause need not look like what it affects, but it has to be able to have the things that are found in the effect, and it has to have them in a different way than the effect has in the material world in reality. And so a mind can do that, and since we know that our minds are finite, that is, our minds can go out of existence, there must be a mind that does not go out of existence, it does not come into existence, a mind that actually contains everything there is, and that has no potential whatsoever because it is purely actual, and that is the mind of God. And from that, we can go on to the concept of natural law. So that's where we'll go now. It says here, natural law, the modern attitude toward the moral views defended by religious believers, including the traditional sexual morality so hated by secularists, can only be, in other words, the views defended by religious believers are often hated by secularists, and secularists make fun of these views, and that these views can only be regarded as superstitious by secularists, without rational foundation by seculars, motivated by bigotry by seculars and so forth, is a familiar enough cliche. In other words, the secularists are always attacking the idea of religion and the idea of natural law. Some of the things that they propose to do, you've just heard me talk about in the headlines that we were talking about at the beginning of the show. We can take, for example, Richard Dawkins. He's a very, very strong materialist and a very, very strong antagonist of religion and an antagonist of natural law. And he proposed to replace the Ten Commandments with a list that includes enjoy your own sex life. And he puts a tag on there, as long as it damages no one else. And he goes on to propose that pedophilia, for example, is perfectly okay. And we have other people along those lines thinking just like him. And he was saying these things many years ago, and now we have these things actually happening in reality because of this antagonism toward the natural law and this abandonment of the natural law. And so we want to get, you know, at what the natural law is. And it says here, combine this proposal, Dawkins's proposal, to replace religious instruction for children with something more progressive and that he thinks is perfectly okay, such as pedophilia, and you arrive at the headline that I talked about at the beginning of this show from Planned Parenthood. You can see where it came from, where this came from, this kind of thinking, this thinking against the natural law. And he says that it would be perfectly okay, for example, there isn't any ethical way to determine whether something is good or bad, except in effect, Dawkins is saying, if it feels good, do it. And if it feels good to some people, then it's perfectly okay. And this is the kind of morality that is actually...
Yes, it spilled over to the church big time after Vatican II. This is not what Vatican II intended. But afterwards, people took on this secular thought that you can't sin if you don't think it's sinful. And it comes right from that type of thinking.
Exactly. And he goes on here to talk about, he says, like so many of the ideas and arguments that religion has looked at, natural law theory is very badly misunderstood by those who criticize it. And it's a person like Dawkins who criticizes it without ever understanding it. And that's what I was trying to get at, is that there are so many people that criticize natural law. They hate natural law. They hate the idea of religion, and they poo-poo natural law and pretend that there isn't any such thing, because natural law restricts all of the kind of things that they would like to do, and they are able to rationalize and justify those things without natural law. So what is natural law? It's very badly misunderstood by those who criticize it. The usual objections go like this. If it's wrong to go against nature, then isn't it wrong to wear glasses, ride bicycles, etc., since these aren't natural but artificial? If what's good is what's natural, then other people say, isn't everything we do therefore good, since everything that happens in nature is by definition natural? If homosexuality is genetic, doesn't that show that it's natural too? And so on and on, tiresomely and cluelessly. This is a complete misunderstanding of natural law. Perhaps it is obvious from what's been said already what is wrong with these objections. But if not, here it is. The nature of a thing from an Aristotelian point of view is, as we have seen, the form or essence it instantiates. Hence, once again, to haul in the idea of something existing in a mind, such as triangularity, for example. It is of the essence, nature, or form of a triangle to have three perfectly traced straight sides. Notice that this remains true even if some particular triangle does not have three perfectly straight sides. And indeed, even though every material instance of a triangle has some defect or another. In other words, the material things do not actually represent triangularity as we understand triangularity in our mind. We know, for example, that a perfect triangle, as I've said before, has exactly 180 degrees and three exactly straight sides, and yet in reality, that is, in the material world, we can't draw a triangle like that. No matter how perfect we try to draw it, there'll be some flaw in the triangle, and if we blow it up big enough, we would be able to see that flaw. The point is that there are defects, failures to conform to the nature or essence of triangularity. The fact that such defective triangles exist in the natural world and in accordance with the laws of physics doesn't make them any less unnatural in the relevant sense. In other words, they're still triangles. So, for example, the function or final cause of eyeballs is to enable us to see, but that is eyeballs in the perfect world, in the real world, in the material world, are not always going to be perfect. None of them will be actually perfect, but some of them will be flawed in such a way that the defect will cause problems in seeing. Suppose someone's eyeballs are defective in some way, making that person's visions blurry. In that case, to wear eyeglasses isn't contrary to the natural function of eyeballs, since the end of eyeballs is to see. Rather, it quite obviously restores to the eyeballs their ability to carry out their natural function. In other words, the person who has eyeballs that carry out their natural function flourishes much better. And it is more natural to him to have eyeballs that function and see, and it's unnatural for him to have eyeballs that don't function properly and see. So it is not unnatural to wear glasses. To wear glasses and for human beings to use their minds to find ends that will serve the purpose of the ends and goals of the particular organs of the body is a good thing. While it is true that some defenders and critics of traditional sexual morality, for example, seem to worry themselves endlessly about whether homosexuality has a genetic basis, the question is largely irrelevant, and they shouldn't waste their time. For it is quite obvious that the existence of a genetic basis for some trait does not by itself prove anything at all, because, in other words, we can have physical traits in the real world that are defective. And that doesn't make this somehow or another simply because they occur naturally that they somehow or another are okay. If we're born with a club foot, for example, it doesn't show that club feet are good, but it's perfectly natural to be born with a club foot. But that doesn't mean that a club foot is good. And we certainly wouldn't tell someone with a club foot that he ought to be proud of what he has and that he should enjoy having a club foot, and it's perfectly natural for him to have one. And if anybody tries to suggest that he change the club foot, he shouldn't do it. And it's the same thing they're saying with other things. Sex is not directed at same-sex functions. The proper ends of sex, the goal, that is the natural function of sex, and everything does have live in a goal-directed world. The proper function of sex is procreation, ultimately. I mean, there are other aspects of it, but the proper end is procreation. It's the idea of creating a family, and it's a family that actually contributes to and keeps society going, and it's a healthy family that is necessary. And so all of the things that make a family flourish are good. That's the natural law. And those things that don't make a family flourish are bad. That's the natural law. And so something that is a tendency to do something that hinders that is not necessarily good any more than a club foot is good. And this is, the idea of the natural law. And so to say that God makes, for example, if someone is born blind or someone is born with a club foot, we certainly don't go around saying God makes people that way. The fact is that there's only one God. There can only be one actualizer that is fully actual. There can't be two. God decided to make other things, and other things then are material. They're not gods. And so there are, in the material world, there are defects, and God, for his own reasons, lets those defects exist. They are an absence of something. Evil is an absence of the good. And this is what homosexuality or bad eyeballs or a club foot or any other defects actually are. And they go against the natural law. And we certainly don't blame people for having a club foot. And we don't blame someone for having homosexual tendencies. We don't blame somebody for having inclinations and so forth that may be being susceptible to various temptations and things more than other people. But nevertheless, those things are not good, and the natural law directs our ethics and our morality in a direction that makes us all flourish in a much better way. And it gives an absolute basis for ethics, and it comes out of the idea of the mind of God and the goal-directedness of the world. And that's what we're talking about here when we talk about the natural law. And he goes on here that, of course, the fact that the person is born with a homosexual tendency doesn't show that homosexuality is immoral, but the fact is that the practice of it does. After all, having a club foot is not immoral, and neither is being born blind or with a predisposition, for various bad habits. But if a person would insist, for example, on giving himself a club foot for somehow or another for some reason because he would have surgery in order to have a club foot instead of have surgery to remove the club foot because maybe he wanted to make some kind of a extreme demonstration. we would consider that very, very bad behavior. And yet we allow this with transgender, for example, the idea that someone can mutilate their body in order that they can somehow change their natural identity from a man to a woman or vice versa is simply not only not in keeping with the natural law, but actually impossible and simply a pretense. And we shouldn't be encouraging it, and we certainly shouldn't absolutely be coerced into going along with it. So we're going to have to stop here. But the point is that this whole idea of the dropping of Aristotelian philosophy, the idea that everything has a direction, a teleology, that there are end goals in nature and end goals in human behavior that are natural to the essence of things, has caused all of the relativism and inability of our modern society to deal with moral and ethical problems. So we're going to have to stop here, and we'll go ahead and say our prayer, and we'll come back and maybe talk a little bit more about some of these things next week. So Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle, be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.